Welcome to Class Matters, an educational program examining the role played by social classes and the class divide in the U.S. and around the world. I'm Rich Whitney.
I'm Paula.
We discuss matters of class because class matters. And today on Class Matters, we return to the very important subject of what has been dubbed the censorship industrial complex, that is the web of government agencies and agencies that receive contracts from the federal government, semi-private, but actually acting like agents of the government, and how they have gone into social media companies, the main platforms like Facebook and Meta and Twitter and YouTube, etc., and cause them to censor expression, censor free speech, censor ideas that they don't like, censor ideas that conflict with the narrative they want the American people to believe. And a lot of this, of course, we've talked about, you can find at the public.substack.com website. There's a whole website also devoted to the censorship industrial complex. There's a lot going on here. But today on Class Matters, we want to focus on part of the fight back. And a lot of you may not know about this, but the states of Missouri and Louisiana, through their attorneys general, have sued, I think it's 57 officials of the Biden administration and other actors, heads of agencies that were involved in all of this, to stop it. They're demanding an injunction and declaratory relief to try to stop the government from censoring the free speech of Americans using these third-party cutouts, etc., but often directly just by going to the social media companies and threatening them.
I just want to say that a lot of people don't like lawyers, and they'll quote Shakespeare, "First we'll kill the lawyers," not realizing that what Shakespeare meant by that is, if you want a complete breakdown of all law and order, and you want a tyrant to be able to exercise total control, then you have to kill the honest lawyers, like the attorney generals here of Missouri and Louisiana.
Yeah.
And props to them for standing up for the Bill of Rights, the right of free speech.
Yeah. This is an amazing development, and so far they are winning. They've defeated most of the motions to dismiss that have been filed on a technicality. The court did grant a motion to dismiss President Biden himself as a defendant, but all the main actors, the agency actors of the Biden administration, are still under suit. Discovery is still ongoing. It's gone up to the appellate court a couple times. Appellate court has upheld this. This suit is going forward.
Can you imagine trying to depose President Biden? He doesn't know what he ate for breakfast.
Well, I know. Yeah, it's a little problematic. In any event, you can find out more about this at the website of the National Civil Liberties Alliance. That's nclalegal.org. The National Civil Liberties Alliance is working with the state plaintiffs. There's also some individual plaintiffs involved in the lawsuit, including some prominent doctors who are shut down by the censorship regime over their views on COVID, including Dr. Jay Bhattacharya and the other doctors who wrote the Great Barrington Declaration, Dr. Aaron Cariotti of the University of Stanford, a very accomplished scientist in the field of biomedical ethics. And they're, of course, they were victims of this censorship regime. And of course, as we pointed out in this program many times before, neither science nor medicine can advance without freedom of speech, freedom of discussion, freedom to critique the findings of other scientists so that we get to the truth. That's how science works. Instead,
No. Science is decreed from the top.
Yeah, exactly.
And the decrees are enforced by draconian measures. You don't understand how science works.
Yeah. That's the corruption of science that, of course, we've been subjected to.
Follow the money. Oh, yeah. I mean, follow the science. Well, the funny thing is, if you follow the money, you get to the science that is decreed.
The science that is decreed, science in air quotes.
Yeah.
So we wanted to share with you, to kind of highlight this, a document called the Supplemental Brief in Support of the Motion for Preliminary Injunction that was filed by the plaintiffs in this case, because it presents a really good summary of what the case is about. Now, I will say most of this particular case in attacking the censorship industrial complex is over the censorship involving COVID and the vaccines, etc. Although it does venture into some other areas of censorship, and as we shall see, the government defendants cast a much wider net than that, and this kind of gets into it. But this is an excellent summary. So, from the supplemental brief in support of the motion for preliminary injunction, this case involves some of the most egregious First Amendment violations in American history. Federal officials from the White House and multiple agencies use pressure, threats, coercion, cajoling, collusion, demands, and trickery and deceit to induce social media platforms to censor speakers and viewpoints on social media that the federal officials disfavor. The proof of this sprawling federal censorship enterprise is voluminous and overwhelming. Plaintiffs summarize key points of the evidence in 1,442 numbered paragraphs with specific citations of the record for each point.
We're not going to read all that.
No, we're not. But I have read a good part of it, and you can read this Exhibit 1 that they're referring to. It's like 366 pages long or something like that, but it chronicles it meticulously. But we want to continue with the summary for now. White House officials like Rob Flaherty, Andrew Slavitt, and Jennifer Psaki have engaged in a relentless pressure campaign, both in public and in private, to coerce platforms into censoring disfavored viewpoints on social media. Surgeon General Vivek Murthy and his staff coordinate closely with the White House in this pressure campaign, causing social media platforms to scramble and assure federal officials that we hear your call to do more to censor disfavored viewpoints. The CDC flags specific social media posts for censorship, organizes BOLO, or Be on the Lookout meetings, to tell platforms what should be censored, and serves as the ultimate fact checker with final authority to dictate what speech will be removed from social media. Dr. Anthony Fauci, he's one of the defendants here, orchestrated an elaborate campaign of trickery and deception to induce social media platforms to censor the lab leak theory and other viewpoints he disfavors. The FBI, likewise, deliberately planted false information about hack and leak operations to deceive social media platforms into censoring the Hunter Biden laptop story, something we've talked about in this program. The FBI, Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, which we've talked about, and the GEC, that's the Global Engagement Center of the State Department, collude with social media platforms in hundreds of meetings about misinformation, and those agencies repeatedly flag huge quantities of First Amendment protected speech to platforms for censorship. CISA switchboards reports of so-called misinformation from state and local governments to platforms for censorship. So even state and local government actors are being censored by this, which is part of the reason why the states of Missouri and Louisiana sued. CISA and the GEC are pervasively intertwined with massive public-private censorship enterprises, like the Election Integrity Partnership, which we've talked about, a collaboration among government, social media platforms, and activist nonprofits to monitor, track, and censor enormous volumes of American speech on social media. Federal health officials in the Surgeon General's office, CDC, and Health and Human Services collaborate in a similar enterprise called the Virality Project, which procures the censorship of enormous quantities of First Amendment protected speech. These are just examples of the violations herein. Altogether, these censorship activities by federal officials and agencies constitute a gargantuan federal censorship enterprise. This enterprise is highly effective. It has stifled debate and criticism of government policy on social media about some of the most pressing issues of our time, and its activities are flagrantly unconstitutional. The court should enter a preliminary injunction putting a stop to these egregious violations of the First Amendment.
Dang straight.
Yep. Now I'm going to skip over a little bit of legal process language here and continue with this introduction. Here, there is overwhelming evidence the defendants significantly encourage social media censorship, especially the White House and Surgeon General's office and others as well. Beginning in early 2021 and continuing through the present, White House officials such as Rob Flaherty, Andy Slavitt, and Jennifer Psaki Working with others such as Clark Humphrey, Courtney Rowe, Christian Tom, and Benjamin Wakana, have conducted and continue to conduct an intense pressure campaign against social media platforms in public and in private to demand greater censorship. Rob Flaherty spearheads this campaign with a relentless chain of emails, meetings, and communications pressuring the platforms to engage in greater censorship of COVID-related speech. Flaherty continuously badgers platforms for more detailed information about their censorship practices. In each case, the document references specific paragraphs to the exhibit. So, and I've read, like I said, I've read this statement of facts, and it's true what they're saying here. It's incredible the amount that he was just badgering these companies day after day after day.
I've never even heard of him.
Well, he's close to President Biden. He's a close advisor to Biden.
Okay.
And I think this is his specific task.
Well, I mean, sometimes they keep the worst people in the shadows.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. White House officials ask platforms for reports on specific censorship issues. And so gives examples of him asking and receiving a 24-hour report back on misinformation about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Or saying to YouTube, we'll look out for the top trends you've seen in terms of misinformation around the vaccine. White House officials make very specific demands of how to increase censorship of disfavored speech. The White House pressures the platforms with accusations and belligerent language. And again, quoting this Rob Flaherty, he's accusing Facebook at one point, you're hiding the ball. This would all be a lot easier if you would just be straight with us. Really couldn't care less about your views of this particular product. And then snapping after not receiving a response on the censorship of Tucker Carlson quickly enough for his liking, quote, these questions weren't rhetorical.
What a bully.
Yeah, he was. He was bullying them. That's exactly right.
Wow.
Right. And they go on and give
that's
several other
too.
Examples. Yeah. At one point, he says to his contacts at Facebook, are you guys effing serious? I want an answer on what happened here, and I want it today.
Now, why should a private corporation, we're always told, have the right to censor, right? Because they're a private corporation.
Yeah.
But they're having to answer to some flunky in the White House.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Indeed, Flaherty accuses Facebook of fomenting the January 6, 2021 riot by not censoring enough speech. Quote, an insurrection which was plotted in large part on your platform.
Well, that's a bunch of bull.
I know.
And you know what's weird is they say this about Facebook, but then there was another platform. People used to say, well, if you don't like Facebook censorship, it's a private corporation. Just go out and start a private corporation of your own. Remember?
Right.
And some guy did, and I cannot remember the name of it now. But
yeah.
They also accused him of fomenting the January 6th.
Right.
They're talking out of both sides of their mouth. But that one, they attacked him and shut down his platform.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, start one of your own that actually allows free speech. Yeah, good luck with that, sucker.
Yeah, that's
right. You're living in a totalitarian police state, and we have 7 ways to Sunday to shut you down.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. The encouragement takes other forms as well. White House officials praise the platforms for censoring content that does not violate their policies. And White House officials demand the removal of specific posts and accounts of disfavored speakers, and social media platforms routinely comply. And they give examples of Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Tucker Carlson, and Tommy Lahren of Fox News, and former New York Times science writer Alex Berenson. Also, there was calls for the deplatforming of the so-called disinformation dozen, which I think included them. But extended beyond that, they also give examples of parodies and humor. They demanded the takedown of a parody or fake account of Dr. Fauci and a comedic video of Jill Biden.
Oh, and you know what they really hate? Memes.
Yeah.
They hate memes because, yeah. You know, the old cliche was, and again, cliches are the wisdom of the ages in a few words.
Mm-hmm.
Look before you leap, right?
Right.
A meme is like better than a cliche because it says great wisdom, but it also has a funny picture.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
People really like it and it's really effective. And that's why our overlords hate it.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
They don't like being ridiculed.
That's true. When aggressive demands do not get quick enough results, the White House resorts to overt and implied threats. Again, they quote some things from Flaherty. Internally, we've been considering our options on what to do about it. Or, this is a concern that is shared at the highest, and I mean highest levels of the White House.
Yeah. Oh, Hunter Biden then, I guess, because he gets the highest of anyone in the White House.
There you go. In addition to private demands, public pressure is a key part of this campaign. The White House makes detailed public demands for greater censorship, including at the White House press conferences on May 5th and July 15th, 2021. And that's when Jennifer Psaki demanded greater censorship and called for a robust antitrust program. And this is part of the ongoing threat. In the statement of facts, they also quote a lot of the extensive testimony when the heads of Facebook and Twitter, et cetera, were hauled before Congress.
I remember that. They were threatened, insulted, and threatened, basically. Yeah, get in line or else.
Right. If you don't do more, well, we're going to use our antitrust power to go after you. And this is constantly done. And then Jennifer Psaki did the exact same thing on behalf of the White House.
And that's when I first started getting thrown into Facebook jail.
Yeah.
After that congressional demand.
Right. And it goes on from there. And they also quote President Biden as accusing the platforms of killing people by not censoring enough misinformation.
What an idiot.
Social media platforms promptly respond to this pressure campaign by repeatedly reporting to the White House that they will stiffen their policies and or take enforcement actions against disfavored speech.
Yes, Master. We will do what you say, Master.
Yeah. And platforms dutifully report to the White House in detail about their censorship practices. Now, at this point, the document, which itself is 79 pages, so we're not going to read the whole thing, starts to talk more about the Surgeon General's office. But I want to skip down and talk a little bit about Dr. Fauci, Dr. Collins NIAID. That's the agency that Dr. Fauci ran for many years. I forget what the acronym stands for. National Institutes of something or other.
Infectious disease, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think this is really, really telling. Dr. Fauci, of course, became this lionized hero during the COVID campaign.
By the media. Yeah.
Right. So skipping down to this part. Dr. Fauci, collaborating frequently with NIH Director Dr. Francis Collins, orchestrated a series of campaigns of deceit to procure the censorship of viewpoints he disfavored on social media, beginning at latest in early 2020. Once he became chief medical advisor in the Biden administration in early 2021, his censorship efforts coordinated with and reinforced those of federal officials in the White House, the Office of the Surgeon General, and the CDC. In the early months of 2020, Dr. Fauci worked closely with Dr. Collins and Jeremy Farrar of the Wellcome Trust, a predominant British science funding organization, to orchestrate a deceptive campaign to discredit and suppress the opinion that SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19, leaked from a laboratory at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, an opinion that has recently been confirmed is likely true. And then it gives several sources.
You know what bugs me? They called it SARS-2 because it was a mutant of SARS-1.
Right.
And then the propaganda machine told us this was a novel virus that's never been seen before. But it's literally called 2.
Yeah, yeah.
I could not believe that people would believe that. People would tell me, oh, it's a novel virus that the human body has never seen before. It's called SARS-2.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Dr. Fauci had powerful motives to suppress the lab leak theory. He is a longstanding public advocate for gain-of-function research, which makes viruses more virulent and transmissible. And his agency, NIAID, funded dangerous gain-of-function experiments on bat coronaviruses at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, the prime suspect for a lab leak.
And at the University of North Carolina.
Yeah, which is another suspect, and I know we need to look at that too. If the lab leak theory were established or widely believed, Dr. Fauci and his agency could face responsibility for the deaths of millions in a global pandemic.
They should be in jail, at least.
Yes, in a crisis of confidence in the public science funding enterprise they run. In a call on the evening of Friday, January 31st, 2020, Dr. Fauci became aware from Jeremy Farrar that Dr. Christian Anderson of Scripps and other virologists had grave concerns that SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19, looks engineered. And that's a direct quote.
Yeah, they said it.
Yeah. Shortly before this call, Dr. Fauci had received a briefing from his staff about NIAID's funding of research on bat coronaviruses in Wuhan.
They weren't the only ones. Remember those Indian scientists said, you know what, we looked at this and this looks engineered. Woo, did they ever get attacked?
Yeah.
They had to issue a retraction just like Galileo. I don't know whose ring they had to kiss, but they definitely had to bow down and say, no, we were mistaken. It's definitely came from a bat and a ferret and a pangolin and a human. They all got together in a wet market.
Yeah, that's
right. Because that's believable.
Yeah. After midnight, after the call with Farrar and Anderson, Dr. Fauci sent an urgent cryptic email to his confidential deputy, Dr. Hugh Auchincloss, attaching a paper about the SARS gain-of-function research that NIAID had funded in Wuhan, and telling him to, quote, keep your cell phone on, you will have tasks today that must be done. Dr. Fauci later testified 18 times that he could not remember anything about this urgent cryptic email exchange with his principal deputy. He got deposed in this lawsuit, and it's amazing.
I don't remember sending that email.
Yeah.
Sends it in the middle of the night going, alert, alert, everyone's got to get on board, and we've got to do something about this. We've got to stop these people from pointing out that this is manufactured. Yeah, I don't really remember sending that email. Yeah.
In fact, Dr. Fauci's testimony on this email and other points is not credible. And it contradicts the documentary evidence, including his own contemporaneous emails, on approximately 37 points. And again, they have citations. Further, Dr. Fauci testified that I do not recall, or similar, 174 times in his deposition.
Why would anyone believe him? Trust the science. He's got a bad memory. He sounds worse than Biden.
Yeah.
He can't remember 187 times?
Yeah.
Why is he in charge of this multi-billion dollar enterprise?
Yeah, that's right. And counting variations on I don't remember, at least 212 times.
It's ridiculous.
This contrasts with his public claims on some of the very same events that he was asked to testify that, quote, I remember it very well.
Oh, wow. How about that?
Yeah, he contradicts himself numerous times in his deposition. It also contrasts with his clear, specific recollection of contemporaneous events that are not directly related to the case.
Oh, how odd.
Plaintiffs are filing with the court a video compilation of Dr. Fauci's response saying, I do not recall, so that the court may assess his credibility by viewing his demeanor.
Oh, that's awesome.
On February 1st, 2020, Dr. Fauci participated in a clandestine conference call with a group of science funders and influential science funding authorities to discuss the lab leak possibility.
Now remember, this is only a day after these researchers first said,
yes.
Hey, this looks pretty manufactured to us.
Yes, yes.
A day later, he sends out an email in the middle of the night, all hands on deck, holds a conference the next day, but now can't remember?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's believable. Not.
Farrar insisted that the call was to be in total confidence. Influential figures with a strong vested interest in avoiding a major scandal about science funding practices were heavily represented on the call. As science funding authorities, they also had powerful influence over the scientists on the call.
Well, yes, they did.
Dr. Fauci testified 16 times that he could not remember details about the call, though to the national media he has proclaimed of the very same call, I remember it very well.
Oh, how about that?
Contemporaneous emails show that the participants on the call, including Dr. Fauci, Dr. Collins, and Farrar himself, were keenly aware that there were powerful arguments in favor of the lab leak theory of COVID's origins. And then gives some quotes, hard time explaining that as an event outside the lab. I really can't think of a plausible natural scenario. I just can't figure out how this gets accomplished in nature. It's stunning. And others said that they really supported the lab leak theory at the time.
Well, it didn't happen in nature. It happened in a wet market. A pangolin, a human, a bat, and a ferret got together.
That's right. Yeah,
it was a wild party.
Don't forget the raccoon dog or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Immediately after the call, the participants launched a deceitful effort to manufacture the appearance of scientific consensus against the lab leak theory. Two scientists on the call, Eddie Holmes and Christian Anderson, began drafting a scientific paper for publication to decisively refute the lab leak theory, even though their contemporaneous emails indicated that they were both inclined to believe the lab leak theory.
I wonder why they changed their mind.
Yeah, exactly.
Are they going to talk about the grants?
Yes, I think they do at some point.
Yeah, because they got, they got million-dollar grants.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they changed their mind.
Yep.
Follow the science.
Yeah, no, follow the money.
But first follow the money, yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
Following the call, Dr. Fauci, Farrar, and Dr. Collins communicated extensively about the plan to discredit the theory. Among other things, they plotted to prod the WHO, World Health Organization, to establish a panel on the lab leak theory that they would stack with a core group of their own contacts, then frame the work of the group and put pressure on this group from our and your teams to push it to their preferred result, discrediting the lab leak theory.
And people trust the WHO? Yeah. The U.S. is about to sign a treaty turning over national sovereignty on matters of public health
right.
to the WHO.
Yeah.
Who is compromised by these big pharma people and these gain-of-function bioweapon research
Well,
labs
the money
people,
too.
The money
right.
people. Yeah. Right. Right. But all I'm saying is you can't trust a worldwide public health organization that allows itself to be influenced by people who are working on bioweapon research,
yeah.
trying to take viruses and bacteria and other pathogens and make them more deadly for the human species. Why would you trust WHO?
Yeah, yeah. There is no doubt about the purpose of this conspiracy. Dr. Fauci's, Farrar's, and Dr. Collins's communications at the time repeatedly expressed concern about preventing the spread of the lab leak theory on social media. Dr. Fauci in particular expressed concerns about the threat of further distortions on social media.
Distortions.
Yeah, that's right.
That means truth.
By February 4th, 2020, 3 days after the clandestine conference call, Eddie Holmes sent a draft scientific paper attacking the lab leak theory to Farrar, who forwarded it to Dr. Fauci. Though the draft purported to refute the lab leak theory, Holmes noted that he did not mention the virus's other anomalies that make it look bioengineered, as this will make us look like loons. That's a direct quote.
We're going to look like loons if we use the construction of the genome.
Right,
then
right.
you look like a loon.
Yeah, that's right. Dr. Fauci's and Dr. Collins' own emails make clear that they were keenly aware that the virus may have been created through serial passage through tissue of humanized mice in the Wuhan laboratory whose work NIAID was funding. Farrar sent Dr. Fauci 4 drafts of the scientific paper to review in the weeks following the conference call. These drafts claimed that science clearly demonstrates a natural origin for SARS-CoV-2. By February 17, 2020, the scientific paper discrediting the lab leak theory was accepted in a prestigious journal and was in preprint form, which was forwarded to Dr. Fauci for review. That's the 5th draft. The paper's 5 listed authors were participants in the clandestine February 1st, 2020 conference call, and they all privately acknowledged the plausibility of the lab leak theory in emails that were shared with Dr. Fauci. Yet the paper claimed that, quote, SARS-CoV-2 is not a laboratory construct nor a purposefully manipulated virus. Dr. Anderson, the lead author, thanked Dr. Fauci for his advice and leadership in preparing the paper.
And Grant.
Yeah, and sent him a 6th draft to review, seeking further input from Dr. Fauci. The paper was then published in Nature Medicine on March 17, 2020, as the proximal origin of SARS-CoV-2. The final version attacked the lab leak theory in unequivocal terms. Quote, irrefutably shows, we do not believe that any type of laboratory-based scenario is plausible.
No, we only have 300-plus gain-of-function bioweapons research labs all around the world.
Yeah.
But they don't do anything.
That's right.
They're just minding their own business, just playing with viruses.
That's right. Dr. Fauci and Dr. Collins then collaborated on a deceitful campaign to push the article into prominence, treating it as a scientific consensus created through independent scientific inquiry rather than the product of a secret cabal of science funders bent on suppressing the lab leak theory to protect their own reputations.
Well, that's a good line right there.
Yes.
That's exactly what happened.
Dr. Collins featured it on NIH's official blog, citing the proximal origin of SARS-CoV-2, to describe the lab leak theory as outrageous and debunked, leading national media to proclaim, sorry, conspiracy theorists. When Fox News host Bret Baier still discussed the lab leak theory, Dr. Collins emailed Dr. Fauci noting that he had hoped that the Nature Medicine article had settled this very destructive conspiracy and asking if there was anything more we can do to discredit the theory. And it goes on from there. Unfortunately, we are out of time. But again, you can find this document by going to the website of the National Civil Liberties Alliance, nclalegal.org. And look at the supplemental brief in support of the motion for preliminary injunction. A lot of other good documents there, including the court documents. Very good reading and very, very informative on this important effort by the states of Missouri and Louisiana to shut down as much as possible the censorship industrial complex. Thanks for listening to Class Matters. We'll be with you again next Monday.